I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, allaussieradio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, first of all, we're in Port Macquarie.
Yes, and we're visiting Ricardo's.
We are visiting Ricardo's, and I get to chat to the owner, Tony.
Yes.
What do you know about Ricardo's?
Well, they have the most beautiful tomatoes, I must say that, and you can pick your own strawberries.
You can. And you know the thing I love about picking the strawberries at Ricardo's?
What's that?
You don't have to bend your back.
No, you don't. It's all hydroponic and it's all waist level up.
It is indeed.
It's brilliant.
I don't know who gets most of the fun, the kids, the parents, or the grandparents, watching the kids having so much fun.
Yes.
Picking strawberries and you know, the thing is, though, I wonder how many they eat.
I don't know. You're not allowed to.
You're not supposed to. You're supposed to put them all in the bucket and pay for the bucket.
You can, but you can also stop and have a coffee or a tea in their cafe. And also, too, they have sauces and chutneys and everything for sale.
Absolutely. Their cafe is called the Red Cafe, isn't it? Or Cafe Red.
Yep.
Now, it's a great day out, eating experience in the countryside. They've got fabulous parking.
Yes, and it's just off the highway.
Just off the highway, heading which way?
Well, it's off the highway heading north or south.
It is. It's easy to access.
Yes.
And if you've got a big rig,
yes,
caravan, motorhome, plenty of parking.
Yes, there is.
Now, after that, we find ourselves in Whitecliffs.
We do.
Oh, my goodness. What do you think of Whitecliffs, Lynn?
Yeah.
It's very dusty, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
I don't know which
but
I prefer.
It's something to visit.
I don't know which I preferred, Whitecliffs or Coober-Pedy or
all much the same.
They're all the same. They're opals. Whitecliffs, yep. It's in outback New South Wales. What can I tell you? 255 kilometres northeast of Broken Hill.
Mm.
And we met the most interesting guy there. He calls himself Doug.
Yes.
Doug Torpy. And he does things with railway dogs.
He does.
Okay, and I mean steel, woof, woof.
Pegs.
Pegs.
Yes, that go into railway lines, sleepers.
They're what hold the sleepers down. Yep. And what he's done with all the old ones is he's made garden ornaments out of these railway dogs.
Yeah.
Fabulous stuff. Now, from there, we end up chatting to a guy who puts me to shame. He could talk underwater with a mouthful of marbles.
Yes, his name's Peter Kirath.
Peter Kirath is a very interesting gentleman.
He is.
And he runs the...
he's a volunteer.
He's a volunteer.
Yes. Yeah.
He's the president, I believe.
Yes, at the Narromine Aviation Museum.
Now, the Narromine Aviation Museum is a sensational place. And Peter gave us so much information that we just couldn't put him on one program.
No.
He's actually going to be on the show next week, the Peter Kirath special, we should call it, because he's on there next week. So a lot of interesting stuff there.
Yes.
And very, very reasonably priced. I mean, they're open every day except Tuesdays.
Yep.
I think they open around 10, don't they?
Yes, they do.
And they're open till
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And adults, $12.
Yeah.
Cheap as chips. Pensioners, seniors, which is a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, $8.
Grey nomads and high school students, $8. Primary school children, well, you know, $5 for them. Groups of 15 or more, $8.
Mm.
But it very interesting.
Yes, you can spend quite a few hours there.
Quite a few hours easily, and especially if Peter Kirath is your tour guide. He'll keep you there for days. So, Lynn, apart from these fabulous discussions, okay, we've also got a great selection of music,
as requested by the people we interview.
So I'm going to kick off the show with a song by Kerry Kennedy. And it's a number called Glass of Wine.
On with the show.
One more glass of wine, one more chance, one more song from me to you, one more dance, one more rising sun, a new day has just begun, and I'm missing you. I'm missing you. I see your smiling face every time I close my eyes. And I know that you'd be here with me. I told too many lies. But what am I supposed to do? Just wait and give you time. Think about you constantly. You're always on my mind. One more glass of wine, one more chance, one more song from me to you, one more dance, one more rising sun, a new day has just begun. I'm missing you. I'm missing you.
There we go, listeners. That is Kerry Kennedy, and the song is called Glass of Wine. Now, Kerry hails from Dalby in country Queensland, And what a rich and polished presentation he has with his original popular country music. And he's been selling out shows since 1989. So from Kerry Kennedy now, we go to Port Macquarie and we speak with Tony from Ricardo's.
Oh, hello, listeners. Phil C here. This is Roaming Oz and we are at Ricardo's. Now, I'm currently with Tony. You're the owner of the business.
That's
is that
correct.
Right, Tony?
That's correct.
Now, how are you going today, my friend?
Good.
Good, yeah. Good. How long have you had the Ricardo's?
Well, we started, it's nearly 20 years ago now, since we started.
Yeah, right.
With the little honesty box.
An honesty box?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's free entry still, so you don't even need the honesty box.
No.
No, that's a good thing. Because people get to come here, kids, parents, families, seniors, and pick these incredible strawberries that you got.
Absolutely.
Now, tell us a bit about this strawberry, the way you've got it all set up undercover and the way it's watering and so on and so forth.
Yeah, well, they're all undercover,
yes,
which enables us to ripen fruit all year round.
Yeah.
But the great beauty of them is that they're up off the ground. They're on frame, so there's no bending.
Yep.
So people can go and pick it chest height, no bending.
Yep.
Great for the kids to pick down along the bottom, and grandma can pick up the top. So.
Okay. So who do you think gets the most fun, the kids picking or the grandparents seeing how much fun the kids are having?
Yeah,
picking?
Both.
Both, yeah?
Yeah, look, it's a lot of fun, and it's like going out in your back garden and picking some flowers or some fruit and veg. It's very, very satisfying, good for the soul.
Okay, okay. So I guess being undercover too, the vegetables or the strawberries, they can grow all year round, and on rainy days, kids and parents can come here.
Still, it's an all-weather activity. Everything's undercover.
Yep. Now, you've got a lot of parking here, which I want to make mention, because you get a lot of people travelling through with caravans and mobile homes. You've got a fairly large area to park, but they can also park out there on the road, can't they?
Yeah, we've got quite a wide road verge out there too. Yeah. So anyone with their RVs or extra long caravans, plenty of room.
Okay, not a problem. And you're just like about 10 minutes out of Port Macquarie, is that
That's
correct?
That's all.
Yep. So anybody that's staying in Port, this is just an ideal place to come to.
Absolutely. And look, we have people just calling through off the highway. We have people, families meeting here, some coming from north, some coming from south. They say,
yes,
well, let's meet at Ricardo's.
Okay.
We have the locals, of course, but, you know, it's all about people driving along. Great place to stop for people just for a cup of coffee, lunch, morning, afternoon tea.
Yep.
We're very well known for our scones here at Ricardo's, so we're very proud of those, and a very popular meal.
Well, I was going to say that, because even if you just want to come and have a look around, because it is free entry, you do have this great cafe, don't you? Cafe Red, where they could get a morning tea, afternoon tea, or a lunch.
Absolutely.
And you got some fabulous dishes that you serve up in there for the kids. You want to tell the kids a few of the things that you serve up? You got strawberry milkshakes.
Yeah, lots of things to do with strawberries, of course. Yeah. The strawberry smoothies and milkshakes and pancakes. And look, there's a great selection in there for everybody. And it's keenly priced, you know, good country fare.
Fantastic. And for anybody that wants to come for lunch, they can also bring a bottle of their own.
Oh, yes.
BYO, and there's no corkage.
Yeah, BYO, no corkage.
Which is fantastic for the seniors.
Absolutely.
Stopping here for lunch, even if they don't want to pick the strawberries, although it's an easy thing to do. As you said, there's no bending.
Yeah.
And they can also prepare some of their own things, because you've got other things here they could pack up and take away with them, couldn't you?
Well, we're very proud to say that nothing goes to waste on this farm.
Uh-huh.
Any strawberries or tomatoes not up to A grade go into a jar. So we've got about 25 or 30 different preserves in there, from jams and relishes and sauces and soups and passata and all sorts of things. So any second grade fruit goes into a jar. So that's become an important part of the business, and very popular with the customers, because we are highly awarded for those. We enter those in a lot of the fine food shows, and we do have great success. So
Well, I noticed that you've got over 30 award-winning jams, marmalades, relishes, pickles, and sauces, and you got the medals from the fine food shows from Sydney, Hobart, and Mungie.
Yep.
So you must be doing something right, Anthony.
Yeah. No, it's good. Starting with good produce.
Now, also with your tomatoes, you're rated as best tomatoes in New South Wales and eastern Queensland. Now, that must make you feel really proud.
Yeah, well, over the years, we've entered the tomatoes into the Sydney Royal, which takes in southeast Queensland as well. And year after year, we've been getting that prize. And so we're very proud of that.
Yes.
Good tomatoes.
And you've won it years and years, like from 2009, I think, was probably the first year.
Yeah, they haven't had the comps for a couple of years for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kept winning it year after year. We missed a few years just to give someone else a chance.
I was going to say that. I had a look because you went from 2009 and I think you only missed one till 2017. You had to give somebody else a bit of a crack at it.
No, there was a fellow that beat us, a fellow from down on the south coast. So okay. He beat us by a point. So
by a point.
Good on him.
And you beat him the year after and the year after and the year after that. Mate, now the other interesting thing to note too is if anybody wants to actually do anything, they can do, like, in relation to the produce and so on and so forth, you can do mail orders, can't you? Like email and phone orders and stuff like that. Tell us a bit about that.
Oh, well, it's pretty straightforward. It's just that on the website we have a shop and people leave and like the produce, they can just do a mail order and we'll shoot it off to them.
Fantastic. So in order to do a mail order, that would be via your Ricardo's, www.ricardo's.com.
That's it, just on the website. There's a little shop in the website.
Okay. Yeah. Or they can just ring up and say...
They can ring if they like. We can do one over the phone.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Mate, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, you're welcome.
That's absolutely great. And we've got a beautiful day here. All we need to do is get some tourists in here for you once this COVID sort of settles down.
Once it settles down, we'll be right.
And get things back to normal.
Yeah. We'll all get back to normal.
Now, I've got to play you a song. I should have asked you this right at the start of the segment. Anything Aussie? Have you got a favourite Aussie singer, a favourite Aussie band?
Oh, my favourite Aussie singer's Richard Clapton.
Ah, Richard Clapton. He's a great singer-songwriter. Yeah. And what would be your favourite?
Girls on the Avenue.
Girls on the Avenue.
That's my favourite Australian song.
They're going to get you in. It's a great song, Anthony. Yeah. Thank you so much for
your time.
Listeners, stick around for Tony's selection, Richard Clapton's Girls on the Avenue. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after this.
Girls on the Avenue, they're trying to get you in. Strolling by with a rosebud smile. Dressed up to kill, lean on the windowsill, looking your way with eyes of fire. But don't you slip, don't you slip in love with the girls on the from a hat. All the Miss Lonely Hearts, ooh, they look awful hard, and sometimes they seem as fragile as glass. But don't you slip, don't you slip in love with the girls on the we
How are you going today, Doug?
Good, mate. Yourself?
Mate, having a fabulous time here in White Cliffs. And I've got to tell you, we didn't know what to expect when we turned off the road. It's about 100 k's from Wilcannia to get to here, to White Cliffs. And it's a pretty unusual place with a lot of special characters just like yourself, my friend. Now, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us today. Tell us all about what you do here in White Cliffs.
I'm retired now.
You're retired?
I'm retired.
Yeah, but you've got this sort of hobby of putting railway dogs and turning them into art. Now, railway dogs, listeners, for the benefit of people who don't know what they are, they're the railway pins. What are they used for, the railway pins?
Hold the railway line down.
Hold the railway line down. But what Doug does, listeners, is he's not using them to hold the railway line down. He's using them to create art. Now, you've got these little sculptors out there, and there's about 600 of them, all depicting different things. You've got a guy, for example, who's got a set of skis on. You've got another chap who's holding a fishing rod. And you make all these things out of railway pins or railway dogs. When did you get the idea to do it?
Oh, just come one day. Yeah. Yep. Just put four together and away they go, yeah.
You put four together and
put a head on it.
Put a head on it and turned it into something.
Something.
You see, I call it art. And to me, it's a sculptor, and it's different, it's creative, but you don't seem all that enthused about it, Doug. What do you call it? Just tinkering, just biding your time.
Biding my time.
Biding your time.
Biding my time.
Okay. What did you do before you came to White Cliffs?
Mallee Farmer.
Yeah, Mallee Farmer.
South of Mildura.
Okay. Yeah. And how long have you been in White Cliffs?
23 years.
23 years. There's not a lot of stuff in White Cliffs, is there? You really got to go to Wilcannia if you want to have some fun. I mean, there's a hotel, there's a takeaway food shop, there's a medical centre, I guess you'd call it that. So there's not a lot to do here other than this tinkering.
And dig holes.
Dig holes. Yeah. Do you do a bit of prospecting, a bit of mining for
used
opal?
To,
or do, you used to?
Used to.
Yeah. So was it the mining or the opal that sort of got you to here? Or what actually, how did you end up from there to here?
Come up here in the early 60s as a rouseabout in Shearer.
Yep.
I always said I was going to come back.
Yep.
Come back and dug a hole, found a bit of opal.
Yep.
I went Yahoo.
Yep.
And I thought that was a waste of time because you couldn't sell it.
Okay.
And then I bought the local store.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then you let the local store go? Sold the local store?
Sold it and bought this house here and called it quits.
Called it quits. Yeah. And now you tinker.
I do. On the workstations occasionally.
Okay.
Mustering and
all that. Mustering, Because really what you do, it's not a business. You don't do it, you don't really do it to make $1 million. You're just doing it for fun and to amuse yourself,
amuse
I suppose.
Yourself. Yeah.
But you do get tourists who come through that want to buy some of your work.
Mm, yep.
So that makes you a sculptor to me, you know. I don't know what you like to call yourself, Doug. I think you're being a bit modest, mate. Just to let the listeners know, it's only like a $3 donation, really, isn't it, to get in?
Yeah,
to come
much.
And visit. $3.
Probably only worth, not even worth $3.
Yeah, very modest. No, it's definitely worth $3, I've got to tell you. And so what got you into it? Was it you just got the four pins one day and thought, I wonder what they'll look like if I put them all together?
Yeah.
And that was it? Yeah,
yep.
Pretty much.
The yard was full of cactuses and peppercorn trees, just a mess out there, so I just cleaned it up and put some rubbish around.
Yeah. Rubbish. It's not rubbish, listeners, okay? Don't be discouraged by Doug's laid-back attitude. Because you've got a little pathway there that you created that kind of meanders through, and you got some old cars out there, you got a rusty car out there, and...
and a burl. Is that a big burl sort of tree root thing? So it is an interesting thing to look at, some of the things, and walk through the little pathway and have a look at what you've put together. Has anybody ever asked you to put one together especially for them? Has anyone ever said, hey, can you make one of these? Whatever.
Yes.
And what was it?
A bloke swimming.
Okay.
But every time she put it in the water, it sank.
Oh, gosh, I hope they didn't put it in the bath and sit on it. That could have been a bit disappointing. So do sometimes people do ask you to make something special for them?
Yep.
Okay. And other than that, you've just come up with the ideas of your own. Because I said you got one with skis, a bloke on skis. You got a guy, I think it looks like he's playing a musical instrument. You got a fella holding a fishing rod. I think you got one out there with an Aboriginal with a spear and a snake. So you've got all these things. You just kind of sit there one day and think, I might just make one of these today.
Today.
That's so it. Whatever pops into your head.
Yep.
How long does it take you to make one of these?
Oh, 2 or 3 hours probably.
2 or 3 hours? Well, okay. So do you make them every day or do you just...
Depends on my partner. If she gives me the shits, I go outside and make one.
So your partner's not here today, obviously, you can say that.
Talk about it.
Your partner's gone into Wool Canyon to have a bit of fun with some girlfriends. So what do you do for funny? You just go to the local hotel and kick up a bit of dust? Or what do yourself? Or do you go to Wool Canyon if you want to just let your hair down?
We haven't been to the pub since the virus started.
Okay.
We stay away from it.
Yeah.
And about once a month we'll go to Broken Hill.
Okay.
Stay the night.
Yep. Okay.
Wine and dine out.
Okay.
Make out reflash and come home.
And then come back home.
Yep.
Okay. And do it all again.
Do it all again.
But what do you like about White Cliffs? Because all I see, there's a lot of very interesting people here, but there's not much else other than Opals here. It's a dusty town, and you've been here over 20 years. What's the attraction for you for White Cliffs? You just like the laid-back lifestyle?
Laid-back lifestyle.
Yeah. Because I don't even think there's a local copper in White Cliffs, is there?
Thank goodness.
So who breaks up the brawls, or is it the last man standing? I imagine there'd be a few kicking up the dust every now and then. There's no coppers.
No coppers. We police ourselves.
Yeah. So you sort of just do your own thing. Nobody really disturbs you in White Cliffs, do they?
Yeah.
It's a town that's pretty much sort of left by itself.
By itself.
Yeah. And you just do your
own thing.
That's
the beauty of it.
Yeah. And that's the attraction for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this house you're living in, this is an interesting looking home. You bought this. What would a house like this cost in White Cliffs, do you think?
This one come up for sale.
Yep.
An old lady had it. Nancy had it.
Mm-hmm.
I knocked on the door and I said, selling the house, Nancy. Yes. She said, I'm going back to New Zealand.
Okay.
And I said, how much you want for it?
Yep.
She said, $40,000.
Yes.
Went and got the chequebook and paid her there and then.
$40,000.
The TV was going, the kettle's on the boil. She walked out and I walked in.
Wow.
So,
$40,000.
Yeah.
Which is, you can't even buy a broken down old car for that, but this is quite a nice home you got here for $40,000.
It's solid. Does it still.
Roof doesn't leak.
Oh, how do you know? Well, when it rains.
I don't see any stains on the roof, so I'm assuming it doesn't leak.
It's got its problems, but we're not fussed.
No. Keeps you out of the weather and... having a good roof over your head for $40,000 sounds good to me. All right, mate. Well, look, I want to let the listeners know you do sell your pieces. I call them sculptors. They're only small. How tall would they be? Their average is about, what, a foot, 30 centimetres or something? Because how long's the pins? They'd be about...
There's different sizes, different shapes, different sizes.
So you don't shape them?
Yeah, hit them with a hammer.
You heat them up first?
No.
Okay.
Just hit them with a hammer.
Bend them.
Weld them together.
Yep.
And probably 7 or 8 inches high, I suppose.
So I guess they're about, on average, probably 10 to 12 inches. Some of the larger ones you've got out there. Some of the ones, you've got chains on some of them so they can swing in the breeze. I notice there's a witch out there flying on a broom. That you can put up and scare something away. The birds coming into your trees. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I appreciate you taking the time to, Doug. I know you're a bit of a quiet person. You don't like to do this sort of thing. So I really do appreciate you taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you.
And I suppose the thing is, listeners, it's an honor system. There's a box at the front gate, $3 to come through and have a look. And if you want to buy something, you ring the bell or knock on the door. Is that the best way?
That's the best way.
Okay, and you'll either be confronted by Doug. He's a big menacing looking fella, so don't go try and nick one on him, because he might hang one on you. And then, of course, you've got your partner, and she's twice as bad, apparently.
Twice as bad.
She's twice as bad. All right, there you go, listeners. I'm going to wind this up now, Doug. Thank you so much for your time, mate. Before I do that, though, Doug, I'm going to play a song for you. What sort of music? You look pretty rough. Do you like the hard rock and roll? You're a country man. What sort of music can I play for you?
Country
music. Yeah. All right, Doug, will you leave it with me? We had a chat before. You haven't got any favourites. So we're going to play a special country song for Doug, and we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after that. Thank you so much for your time, Doug.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much, mate.
From coast to coast by night and day, hear the clicking of the wheels, the humming of the diesel on her ribbons of steel, carrying the memories of a nation built by hand. See the Indian Pacific span the land. She's the pride of all the railway men cross country where she flies, from the blue Pacific waters to where the mountains rise. By lakes and wide brown rivers, through desert country dry, see the Indian Pacific passing by. For the Indian Pacific, she goes a-rolling down the track, 5,000 miles to travel before she's there and back. Beside the line that drove the waves, his battered old gray hat, and kids are catching yabbies down by the river flat. And a woman hangs her washing in a backyard near the line, as the Indian Pacific's rolling by. Hear the whistle blowing lonely neath the Nullarbor starlight, saluting those who walk across the track she rides tonight. Calling to the railway camp and the fiddlers on the line, I'm the Indian Pacific right on time. From the silver of the broken hill to old Kalgoorlie gold, she mirrors all the colours of the land so hard and old. Then the western flowers are blooming and the air is just like wine, and the Indian Pacific's making time. For the Indian Pacific, she goes a-rolling down the track, 5,000 miles to travel before she's there and back. From the waters of the western sea to the eastern ocean sand, the Indian Pacific spans the land. Oh, the Indian Pacific spans the land.
Oh, well, there you go, listeners. That is a Slim Dusty classic, The Indian Pacific. Now I'm going to play you a song by a man named Jeff Brown. Brownie to his friends. And the reason why I'm going to play this is because our next special guest on the program is Mr. Peter Keirath, and he is from the Narromine Aviation Museum. So the song I'm going to play for you by Brownie is a number called Beautiful Betsy, and it's got a tragic story attached to it. The beautiful Betsy was a Liberator bomber that crashed in Krumbit National Park in Australia, 26th of February 1945. Now, the plane was on a Fat Cat mission, transporting men and supplies from Darwin to Brisbane. And the crash killed 8 people, 6 Americans and 2 British. And the wreckage wasn't found until August of 1994. And thanks to Brownie's writing skills, he's come up with a sensational song all about beautiful Betsy. And I'm going to put that on right now. And then straight after this, we're going to have Peter Keirath from the Aviation Museum in Narromine.
February 1945, some wartime history. 8 men in an aeroplane, a half century mystery. A night flight out of Darwin, bound for Brisbane town. They couldn't find a trace of Betsy or where that plane went down. She lay there almost 50 years, a shattered, mangled wreck. On a mountaintop in Queensland, that's where she hit the deck. Now Betsy, she is history, and her resting place was a mystery. It took 49 long years to find her locality. From America she came, a Liberator bomber with a pretty name. They searched time and time again, but found no traces of that plane. She lay hidden on a mountainside, that's where Betsy chose to hide. The resting place for a beautiful girl who could make those massive engines whirl. Now Betsy, she was honest and faithful to the core. 25 active missions saw her leave Australia's shore. A beautiful American girl based out of Darwin town. Even when she limped home hurt, she never let her nation down. All those heavy combat missions put stress upon her frame. They removed her guns and all her bombs, and a pack horse she became. They used Betsy on Tomcat runs, no more enemies she'd see. Transported troops and produce to and from the territory. Pilots thought they would hitch a ride. One would be the best man for the other and his bride. They boarded beautiful Betsy on that fatal night. Neither would have dreamed that it would be their final flight. Betsy, you left Daphne with a broken heart. 4 days from the altar, then her world would fall apart. There was no wedding Saturday, just misery and tears. Betsy, you stole Daphne's groom for almost 50 years. From America she came, a Liberator bomber with a pretty name. They searched time and time again, a park ranger finally found that plane. She'd been at full pelt when she hit the edge. Now in bits she sits upon the ledge. A beautiful spot for a beautiful girl who rests upon Australian soil. Descending from a cloud on that rainy morn, she would have hit that mountain in the early light of dawn. The landing gear was still raised, there'd been no time to react. The investigation concluded all were killed upon impact. Grumpa Tops in central Queensland is scenic countryside. That's where Betsy is today, and those eight men that died. The bomber is a war grave site, so take a look but treat her right. The resting place for a beautiful girl who listens to the curlew's call. The resting place for a beautiful girl who no more makes those engines whirl.
Hi listeners, Phil C here, and this is Roaming Oz, and we're at Narromine. And I'm chatting with Peter Kirath.
Yes.
Peter Kirath, and he is the chairman of the Narromine Aviation Museum. How are you today, Peter?
Oh, Philip, I'm exceptionally well, mate. If I was any fitter, I'd be dangerous.
Yes, I hear that saying quite a lot, and I say that to my partner, Lynn, and she looks at me and says, don't talk to me that way. So, Peter, tell us a little bit about this fabulous museum. First of all, how long have you been involved? You're the chairman. You've obviously been here a while.
I said 25 years, probably about that, although the museum hasn't been here that long.
Okay.
It was opened in 2002.
Right.
And so, yes, I've been involved for a fair period.
For a fair period, yeah.
But what we're doing here is telling the story of aviation in Narromine.
Okay.
It sort of really started with Keith and Ross Smith when they landed here in the Vickers Vimy in February of 1920 on the Great Air Race.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had quite a lot of planes used to fly in and out of here during the 20s, and including Charles Kingsford Smith and others. But then the Narromine Aero Club was set up in 1929, and we think it's one of the oldest in regional Australia these days.
Right.
And they set up T.E. Perry, listed 74, rented 700 acres to the Aero Club for a shilling a year.
Yes.
And so that got flying going. They had the first air show here in 1930.
Right.
And then had others in 31, 35 and 38.
Okay.
And so you can see that Narromine was quite a hub. That first one they had over 5,000 people here then.
Right.
And they ran trains up from Bathurst and Orange and Parkes and Forbes to Narromine.
Okay.
And so then, of course, the war came. And they set up number 5, Elementary Flying Training School here.
Right.
The first 4 were in Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide and Brisbane. Mm-hmm. Number 5 was in Narromine. And during the next 4 years, they trained 2,850 pilots here, which was over 20% of all the pilots trained in Australia.
Wow.
So, but then they wound it up. And we got 8 OTU, an operational training unit here, but they were only here for a couple of months and they moved them to Parkes because we got 618 Squadron RAF here.
Okay.
And they had about 35 mosquitoes here and they were dropping Barnes Wallace's bouncing bomb.
Aha, uh-huh, okay.
And so that was... but then, of course, the Americans dropped the atomic bombs in early August. Mm-hmm. They wound the squadron up here. But they did sell the aircraft in 1947. They had a sale.
Yep.
So you could buy a mosquito with engines for 75 quid.
Wow.
you could buy one without engines for 25 quid.
Okay.
And you could buy a Merlin still in the grease, still in its box for 10 quid.
Wow.
And okay. So, but the bonus... Mainly the farmers, everything was rationed. Fuel was rationed at, you know, 5 gallons a month and all that sort of stuff. But when a lot of the farmers bought the old the aircraft for spare parts, they wanted the wheels and the nuts and bolts because everything in those days was rationed.
Mm-hmm.
So they found that when they got the planes out on the farm, they were full of fuel.
Right.
But it was 150 octane, which was a bit hot for the old tractors.
Yes.
So they used to shandy at 50-50 with kerosene, and it was just right. That was perfect. That was really a big bonus.
Okay.
So, so that's what that display is about over there. And then we've got also a list of all the Narromine POWs. So
right.
There's 35 there.
Okay.
And so, then when they wound that up, Qantas started here about 1948, and they trained here for 20-odd years.
Mm-hmm.
Started with DC-4s, then the Constellations and Super Constellations, and then in 1957, I think they ordered the 707s, and so they trained here touch and go, day and night. But anyway, there's been a lot of activity here.
So what about the World War II veterans, Tiger Moths? Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, that was number 5 Elementary Flying Training School.
Okay, that's what
they had about
those.
85
yes.
Tiger Moths here.
Alrighty.
We have been through all the records of the people that trained here and checked all their initials, all the spellings, what units they served in, the ranks they got to, the decorations they got, and most importantly, whether or not they came back. And we found that over 25% of those blokes didn't come back.
Didn't come back.
That's right.
Wow.
So
okay.
Over 770 or 80, yeah. So.
Okay. So what other things in the museum do you think would interest people travelling through?
Well, the planes. We have currently 4 planes in here.
Right.
3 of which are unique in the world. This is a Corbin Super Ace.
Okay.
It was imported as a kit from the States by Jack Coomber in 1937.
Right.
And he assembled it. And used to fly it back and forth to Dubbo during the pre-war. And then, of course, the war came. It saw no action. And then he used to fly it a bit afterwards and then sold it off. And we got it back probably 9 or 10 years ago now.
Okay.
And we had it restored. We lost it. We didn't know where it was for quite a number of years. But so we've been in touch with the Corbin Society in the States, and this is the only one in the world that they know of.
Wow.
They said they built 8. There's plenty of baby aces around, but none of these.
None of the Super Aces. Wow. Does it still fly, or does it still...
You could, but no, it won't. Don't fly it.
No, I don't, but it still would work.
Oh, it would do, yes. It would do. The engine goes and all that sort of stuff. Since we've restored it, we've had the engine running. Flying it.
So it's a unique piece. It's the only one in the world.
That's right. And it's the same with the Venture glider here.
Yes.
Now, that was built by Jack Coomber and a consortium of Narromine and Dubbo men in Dubbo in 1951-52.
Mm-hmm.
You got the plans from England. And but you had to supply all the materials yourself.
Right.
So they built it, and they used to fly it in Dubbo. I think then went down to Orange and roundabout. But anyway, and then they retired it after about 30 years. There was only 4 of them built, apparently.
Okay.
And this is the only one that's left in the world.
All right, so what about this yellow one to our left?
Yeah, no, I'll tell you that in a minute. We've got the Wright Flyer here.
Okay.
Now, that was built in Narromine between 2000 and 2005 by the Hayden family.
Yes.
That is, as far as we're aware, the only replica that's flown properly in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a replica of the Model A. Cole Pay was a local bloke who moved to Scone, but he used to come and fly it.
Okay.
And it's flown 16 or 18 times now. And so there have been plenty of replicas built, but none of them have flown like this one.
That one's actually flown.
It's flown 16 or 18 times and gets up to about 8 or 9 metres, flies a kilometre to a couple of kilometres along the runway. You wouldn't leave the runway in it. So that's pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the tiger moth here.
Yeah, that's the one.
We've had that in now. It was donated by a local group who had it restored. They bought it in the 80s, I believe. They used to fly it, then they had it restored. And then, unfortunately, somebody ground-looped it, which cracked the spars in the wings.
Oh, okay.
And so that's $100,000 to get that repaired. So they, in their wisdom, decided to donate it to the museum.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was built in 1941. It's an English tiger moth, because they also built tiger moths in Australia. And then it's also got a Gypsy Major engine in it, but it's a Stag Lane, which indicates that it's an English engine.
Yes.
And the other one, the other engine there is also a Stag Lane. So, yeah, we had 85 odd of these here. Some of the classes that we had during the elementary flying training school had over 90 trainees in them. So we have then a very interesting collection here,
mm-hmm.
The Beaulieu collection. Tom Beaulieu was the CO here during the Second World War for a couple of years. What we didn't know at the time was that he was in 3 Squadron in the First World War,
and
he died probably 20 years ago now,
mm-hmm.
and their family decided that they'd like to have his material here. And so we have the propeller of his RE8, so that's over 100 years old.
Wow.
We have his Sidcot flying overalls there,
yes,
which was designed by Sid Cotton, who was a Queensland bloke. And as soon as that's what the Australian Flying Corps used to use,
mm-hmm.
and as soon as they got to Egypt and the Royal Flying Corps saw it, they said, oh, wow, that's what we want. And so they started making them in England.
Uh-huh.
So the very interesting part is, though, that 3 Squadron was the squadron that captured the Red Baron's plane when it crashed.
Right.
And so we have a piece of fabric there off the Red Baron's plane, von Richthofen.
Okay.
And all right. So we also have a piece of fabric there called a lozenge.
Mm-hmm.
That's off a Fokker D7, made under contract by Albatross. It's number 534 made, and it was made in 1918. So that's we have also Tom Beaulieu's, all his medals there, including the DFC. So it's very interesting display. We've got the little numbering system in there where you can get the oversight by reading the red sign.
Yes.
And then if you want to go into the detail, you look at the numbers,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be all described down the front here.
Difference, because it is all run totally by volunteers.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So, definitely. And it's not at the cost to come in?
It's for adults, it's $10.
Right.
For seniors, it's $7.
Okay.
And for kids, high school kids, for primary school kids, it's $5. Okay. Although the little kids, we don't charge for that. No.
And all that money goes into keeping
museum. That's right.
Spick and span. And
that's right. Yeah. Yep.
Fabulous.
And well, we're always got up to. See, we've got the Jabiru there.
Yes.
Now, we only got that last week.
Mm-hmm.
That is number 004.
Okay.
It's the first one commercially sold in Australia. They're made just out of Brisbane.
Right.
And from what I've read so far, since 1980, they've built over 2,000 Jabirus, a lot of which go overseas because they're very highly sought after.
Right.
And but a chap offered us this one, which we purchased from him, and we've just cleaned it up and we're going to hang it from the rafters. So it's number, as I say, 004.
004.
So first one commercially sold in Australia. So Yeah, so that's... but there's always money involved in those sort of things. But we try and keep upgrading. We've upgraded this about 2 months ago. We've put in the Narromine Aero Club one over there. That cabinet was empty. We built it a year ago, and that's given that corner a big lift. And then, of course, we've moved some photos around. We've got an interesting photo up there. Do you know who the fellow in the middle is?
I've no idea.
That's Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, really? The astronaut?
That's right.
Okay.
Second man on the moon. Yeah, well, Buzz Aldrin came out here when the Wright flyer first flew in 05.
Okay.
And I looked after him all day, and lovely bloke to talk to. And then we've got Keith Hayden on the left, who was a plane mechanic during the Second World War and who worked here and a lot of other places. And on the right, we have Eric Hayden, his son, and he was the mover and shaker in getting the Wright flyer built.
Okay.
So, but his father and his mother gave him a lot of help and so on. So,
All right, Peter, well, we're going to have to wind this up now.
Oh, are you?
We could, unfortunately, it's radio. Yes,
you would. There's a bloody lot more work on
TV. I can see that. I can tell.
The women's display there, Nancy Bird Walton and others.
Okay. Well, the thing is, it is radio, yes. Well, brief overview.
Got the big photo here.
Yes. So I guess the thing is, it's a fabulous place to visit. You're not going to see it in half an hour. We've been chatting for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So really, how long do you think? Would you estimate, like, to see it, even a quick view, it'd have to take you an hour?
It would. It depends on your interest. Like, a lot of people just want to... I encourage them to read the red signs.
Yes.
Which we've got in most of the displays, and that gives them a quick oversight. You can read that in a minute or less.
Yes.
And that gives you a quick oversight of what to look at.
Mm-hmm.
If you then want to get into the detail, you can spend another half an hour just reading the details.
The details
that we've
along
got.
To the red
so
signs.
So, look, you can stay... A lot of people, particularly when they've got little kids like this, might stay in here for 40 minutes.
Yep.
But then... You get some of the people that are into aviation and fair dinkum, they'll spend all day.
They'll spend all day,
yeah.
You can understand that.
3 or 4 hours easily.
Easily.
So,
all right.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So. Well, this is the place to come then if you're interested in aviation in Narromine.
Yeah, that's right.
Peter, I'm going to have to wind this up, my friend. I'd love to chat longer with you if we do have a bit of a time limit.
There's a lot more stories, though, mate, I can tell you. You'll have to come back tomorrow.
I will. Yeah. What sort of song can I play for you to wind this up? It's got to be Australian.
Yeah, well, I think I like the Road to Gundagai or Waltzing Matilda or just like those. And they would be pre-war. They'd be 1930s songs, I'd imagine,
absolutely.
Or 1920s.
Yes,
that's what I like.
One of those ones.
Yeah, not so much one of the country or one of the modern ones. Yes. I like that sort of 1920s, 1930s era.
Leave it up to me. I'll try and find a 78 copy somewhere.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, I know. No, that's really good. Really good. So anyway, yeah.
All right, listeners, we're going to be back with more Roaming Oz straight after one of the original 1920 versions of The Road to Gundagai.
There's a track winding back to an old-fashioned shack along the road to Gundagai, where the blue gums are growing and the murrum bench is flowing beneath that sunny sky, where my daddy and waiting for me, and the paths of my childhood once more I will see. Then no more will I roam when I'm heading right for home along the road to Gundagai.
So there you go, folks, The Road to Gundagai. As an Australian folk song, it was written by Jack O'Hagan in 1922 and first recorded by Peter Dawson in 1924. Now, O'Hagan performed his own version later that year, and that was O'Hagan that we had doing that version right there and then for us. It's well known among Australians as one of a small number of pieces which are considered to be Australian folk songs. Now, Gundagai also is a rural town in New South Wales. Jack O'Hagan was born in Fitzroy, Victoria, and he was working at Allen's Music in Melbourne, and he played sheet music for potential customers that were interested in buying pianos. So there you go, a little bit of trivia about Jack O'Hagan.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.